21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
Some of them were angry at the way the earth was abused by the man who learned how to forge her beauty into power.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer, and Kristen Hagrick runs our board. Joining us this portion of 21st Century Radio is a man I can only refer to as a water champion, William Waterway. William has, since the 1960s, raised the nation and world's attention to the sanctity and vitality of our water. Like the human body's circulatory system, the planet's water is a system of its own that invigorates all life. But pollution, we all know, has wreaked havoc in our waters, from local streams to oceans. In addition to discussing his 2007 release, which he collaborated with the UN to edit, Water Voices from Around the World, and his 2001 release, The Holy Order of Water, Healing the Planets, Waters, and Ourselves, William will share a new global perspective he has advanced in its entirety, a three-part water cycle of our planet's water systems. William, welcome back to 21st Century Radio.
Pleasure to be here, Zohara.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. And we'll talk a little bit about the storm that the entire East Coast, if not the world, is focused on in a minute. But you write in your beautiful book, and all the entries in it start with, to the people of the world. You say that there is an awakening water consciousness. What does that mean?
Well, in my belief, at this time in history, the forthcoming philosophy that will hopefully guide humanity out of the mess in which we find ourselves presently will be an all-encompassing water consciousness and water philosophy that we will share around the world.
And it's true, I think, from looking at your many writings and your activities since the 1960s, that this is not new, but it's new to the moderner. It's actually very ancient.
Very ancient. It's encouraging in your reference there, though, to the Water Voices from Around the World book, to see how many global leaders are cognizant of the water crises facing the world today and trying to address it in some fashion or another. And so that, I feel, is a huge step for humankind at this time in history. However, as you just mentioned, early on in the evolution of civilization, this kind of philosophy pretty much saturated the entire civilization. Everyone was very water conscious, water aware, in conserving water, and what I consider most importantly, having a relationship with water. And so therefore we see the Tigris-Euphrates and all the early civilizations having very intimate relationships with water and a huge understanding of the behavior of water, like in the region of Petra in the Sinai Desert, and what we had there as far as the civilization goes, and how advanced they were. Like, we're talking about Hurricane Sandy being a once-in-a-250-year storm event. But the people living in the Sinai Desert, in the region of Petra that I visited, and the Nabataeans, the race of people that lived there, well, they, due to the oral knowledge passed down about water, they were aware of thousand-year events and were prepared for those. So it just goes to show that, and we're just now beginning to understand the knowledge that they had relative to water and these storm events and how to survive in these desert regions. So in some ways, yes, we're very advanced with technology. In other ways, we've devolved and have pretty much divorced ourselves from this intimate knowledge of water.
You know, as I listened to you speak and as a prior guest was talking about the letter mem, which is really water, that it's a very feminine thing. And it's almost as if this kind of encroaching patriarchy that has predominated for the last thousands of years has really obscured the beauty of this holy feminine nature, both within ourselves and within our planet.
You can look at water as being feminine. We do look at our ocean. Many of the terms applied to the ocean deal with the womb as far as being a crucible for life. And yes, in many ways, we have the patriarchal society, so-called, even though there have been patriarchal societies in the past whereby we did not have that divorced relationship from water. But I do see at this time in history, women seem to be at the forefront of reestablishing this relationship with water.
One of the ways is you talk about people having a relationship with water. Let's talk about that, because for most people, water comes out of a spigot. I mean, you, when you were a younger man in the 60s, you rode across the country in order to really look at the waterways with a horse and a pack horse. And so you have a very, and then your own healing, as you described and we've talked about in the past, took place in large part because of the water in a bathtub. So you have a very intimate relationship with water.
In fact, I just got out of the bathtub about a half hour ago.
Well, lucky you. I always say to my husband, oh, my Lord, if civilization collapses, the only thing I'll really miss is my hot baths.
You know, so true. Just something about that. Every time I enter into that hot tub of water, I just thank God for the blessing.
It's the truth. I mean, when you think how long it would take to have to heat water and pour it in through a vessel. And anyway, but talk to us a little bit about that for anybody in the listening audience who might say, what do you mean have a relationship with water? How do you do that?
Well, myself being raised on an organic farm, of course, we had that intimate relationship with the well on our farm and taking care of the animals and our food that we raised. It was a hand-dug well, and pumping the well, of course, to provide water for our home. So it was ingrained in my being since childhood. Relative to the intimacy and the horseback journey that I did in the late 70s, that was because of an epiphany I had when I was working in my three-piece suit job as the senior environmental analyst for the city of Newark, whereby I handled and managed the river system around the city of Newark was under my purview, as was Newark Airport, and as was the fresh water supply of water to the city, a job which I resigned to do the horseback journey. And that is because I felt, though, and it was an epiphany as well, when I was in a meeting in the World Trade Center, I had the first epiphany about seeing myself on a horse back country. But to experience living outside for almost 2 years as I crossed the United States of America from San Diego to Maine, in a zigzag fashion, I traveled with the weather. The Southwest was in an extreme drought that forced me to travel north. And then as I traveled through the Midwest and winter came, I traveled through the Tennessee Valley, down all the way down along the Mississippi Corridor, down into the Southeast, and then down to Florida, and then all the way on up the Eastern Seaboard to Maine. And I traveled with the weather, just like our forefathers did. So the intimacy I gained from that experience was better than having a PhD. It certainly was the best decision that I've made in my life, because I feel philosophically, as part of my, if you want to call a religious belief. It's my belief that during our limited time here that we imprint the experiences that we choose, and this imprinting on our souls is what we take with us into infinity. And therefore, I feel it's very important. And our ancestors were fully aware of that and had a philosophy very similar. And to me, that is why it is so important to appreciate life, to appreciate water, and to have that intimate relationship, to go out into the woods and share time with the other life forms. That's why we have these senses that allow us to have that intimacy with the world around us, to divorce ourselves from the living world and from the living waters of the planet, and to live indoors all the time with no other life forms is almost antithetical to being alive. I mean, why pass through this earthly experience divorced from the living world outside? It makes no sense. You know, and to me, the rarest thing in the universe is the living world and the living waters on this planet. And my God, I want to embrace them. I want to experience them. I want to take them with me forever when I leave.
And as you write, you know, in the book jacket of Water Voices from Around the World, which was accomplished over a period of 3 years, and you say that, you know, they offer us voices of hope and guidance. Folks, this is a beautiful book. It's really beautiful, stunning, over 390 photographs in it. You know, you make very clear that water teaches us that if we, quote, work in harmony with its energies, we will be rewarded with abundant and healthy life. If we pollute and mismanage water, we and all other life forms will suffer disease and abbreviated time on Earth, unquote. And yes. So when we speak of a water consciousness, I mean, right now people's focus here on the East Coast and those watching on the West Coast or from around the world, this megastorm Sandy, we're talking about water surges and people are talking about, you know, the water that will rise. Talk to us a little bit about the storms and the extreme weather patterns we're beginning to see.
Well, the planet Earth has gone through many extremes, weather-wise, geographically-wise, relative to our oceans, relative to ice ages, phases of volcanic activity. Presently, we're going through a period of we're losing our glaciers, we're losing our polar ice caps, and we are seeing the resultant sea level rise. We are also overpumping, humankind is overpumping all the aquifers of the world underneath the land masses, and that is injecting a quantity of water into the atmosphere that otherwise would be captured and stored underground. So besides that, and what we do with the rivers, the impoundments, where we had these huge impoundments such as the Three Gorges Dam in China and other places, we do know now, in hindsight, how these impoundments basically put pressure on the plates of the planet and generate seismic activity such as earthquakes and other problems, landslides, etc. So we are like children in the sandbox, and we keep doing these things to change the surface of the planet. And we learn sometimes too late about how foolish we were, and we suffer the consequences. So, yes, storm activities, perhaps we exacerbate the storm activities through our behavior. We certainly know that we impact the fisheries of the world, the health of the world's oceans, the health of our lakes and rivers through our behavior.
We also know, though, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about it because you have some beautiful content in your book. And I was glad to see some of the people. I actually know them, Maladame Somme and Maud Barlow and Colum Coates. I mean, these are wonderful men and women who have really tried to advance the understanding that water is a conscious life system. And the consciousness of water is really here to help and to heal and to nurture, and that water holds any signature put in it. So when we come back, we'll talk about that water is not just the water we drink or the water we bathe in or the water that we swim in or that the sea swims in. It has an intelligence as a life force as we do. Our guest, if you're just tuning in, is William Waterway. You can learn more by that name at his website, williamwaterway.com. A most beautiful 2007 release. He was the editor in collaboration with the UN, Water Voices from Around the World, as well as an earlier book we've talked about before on this program, The Holy Order of Water, Healing the Earth's Waters and Ourselves.
This is John Torgerson of Seed Savers Exchange at www.seedsavers.org, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zohara Hieronymus.
Another great guest. I think all our guests are just phenomenal. Each of them brings to the airwaves the kind of information I just wish commercial television would one day bring to the world. William Waterway is our guest this hour. His book, Water Voices from Around the World. Also, The Holy Order of Water, Healing the Earth's Waters and Ourselves. You can follow him, his speaking activities, travels, etc., at williamwaterway.com. So just before the break, William, I mentioned that I knew some of the guests that are speaking in your book, and some of them have made a great effort to show that water holds the information that's put in it, and that there is a difference between, as we could obviously think, vital water and what an average person might call stagnant water. Talk to us a little bit about water as a carrier of information.
Well, water is, first and foremost, a mysterious substance. And when I say that, so, I mean, even with today's technology, even with what we have gained in knowledge in physics and biochemistry and chemistry and biology, there isn't a scientist in the world today who can define the molecular structure of water. It remains a mystery, and it remains a mystery because of the hydrogen bonds of water connect and disconnect at over 1 trillion times per second. So as to what water actually is and defining its molecular structure is beyond the human capacity at this time. So therefore, just that alone, Zohara, we have water representing a mystery as an entity. It does everything that water touches. It imprints, which is why when pollutants are put into water, the water absorbs that, dissolves it, and it becomes a carrier of the information from that chemical. But two, the foundation of consciousness and intelligence and memory within our own beings, within our own minds. Our minds carry the most water of any organ in our bodies. Basically, water is a vehicle for imprinting knowledge as well. Besides being a vehicle of creating life, it is also a vehicle for creating intelligence. There are some belief systems that feel that it almost behaves like the Akasha, or the Akashic record, so-called, whereby everything from the very beginning of the creation of the universe is imprinted in the molecular structure of water. You know, as we continue to gain knowledge, we gain a greater respect for water and its what it has inherent within it and its abilities to give us intelligence and consciousness, but also, too, as a vehicle of perhaps intelligence unto itself. Victor Schauberger, I assume you're familiar with him, Zoe?
Yes, absolutely. And Callum Coates, who continued his work. We used to talk about this wonderfully with the late Christopher Bird, who I know you knew.
Yes.
And, you know, absolutely. So tell our audience a little bit about Victor Schauberger and Callum Coates, who has continued to do that work.
Well, Victor Schauberger, the book that Callum Coates produced is called Living Energies. But Victor Schauberger had a relationship with water, whereby he communicated with water, spent a lot of time being in, near the streams in Austria, where he became renowned with his understanding of forestry. But out of that came several theories, theories that have been corroborated by science through time. And he even developed a theory relative to water being able to provide energy for flying saucers and missiles, etc. And because of that, he and because of his knowledge of water, he did get into a little bit of an imbroglio with Adolf Hitler, who kind of kidnapped him and was debriefing Schauberger about his information relative to the abilities of water to provide an unlimited source of energy, which basically where we're going today with hydrogen and obtaining hydrogen energy from water, but we are still evolving to that point. You know, he wrote that relative to water, that the people who love it should only care for it, that those who view water as an object of speculation do so at the cost of causing harm to all life on Earth. He also was a great protector of the forest of the planet, and as you well know, what we are doing to the forest of the world today in the Amazon, etc., burning the forest in the rainforest in South America, etc. But he and many others forecast that the destruction of the forest would inevitably lead to the loss of the living energies in the world's waters, of the rivers and the rivers that then supply those living energies to the world's oceans.
And you know, one of the things I'd just like to interject, because our audience has heard us talk about the value of homeopathy, and I'm not going to take a lot of time about it, but it's really because it's a water science. And the signature of the material that's put in the water is what is ultimately captured and put in the little tablets or the water element with the remedy. So are the ancient famous healings of crystal healings or various gemstones that make holy water. So there are many applications that we see today in medicine, just it's not promoted by the AMA. So when we look at water as being a vital carrier of very positive healing information, in addition to itself being a healer, I mean, when I think of water, I think of water as being the holy healer.
Well, all through time, and in my book, The Holy Order of Water, I explore and do a meditation on water healing. Your reference to crystals, of course, all crystals of the planet, all crystal stones, could not manifest without the presence of water, because crystals are made under very extreme pressures deep in the earth. And if water was not present during that time of crystallization and the creation of those crystals, they could not form, and they would be just crushed to dust. So you need that mitigating presence of water in order to create the crystals that then do have an energy to them that has been documented. We use crystals for storing information in computers, for instance. But, yes, the water as a healing entity, long before we had religion, long before we had modern medicine, water was the healer. Water was, in fact, all of the first healing centers of the world were at confluences of rivers, are where springs would manifest onto the surface of the earth. We realized that springs had particular properties and qualities that helped to enable healing and facilitate healing. So the first so-called healing shrines where water was present eventually evolved into being spiritual centers, because they associated the healing with spirit, with spiritual energies that were carried by the water. That's why we have many of the myths relating to, talk about the feminine, the goddesses of the springs and the healing goddesses and their presence. So, and then all through time, and a lot of your religious centers, and I talk about this, this is in the book Water Voices from Around the World, as well as in the Holy Order of Water, that all of the ancient religious centers of the world that exist today that have a claim of on antiquity going back hundreds or thousands of years relative to their location are all founded on locations where there is a very strong presence of water relative to being either a spring or a confluence of water bodies nearby. So this is worldwide. In the United States, when we first came here, the colonialists, they had books that they took into the backcountry about for healing and using water as a medicine. And as we evolved in this country and established a form of government and a medical system, we had the American Hydropathic Association, which was the association that continued with the water healing, water as a medicine, and we had the American Medical Association. And those two lived in harmony side by side through the early 1900s. It wasn't until modern medicine started hooking up with the powers that be in Washington that eventually banned the American Hydropathic Association, the Water Healing Association. They actually made it illegal, calling them a bunch of quacks, and that the only healing methodologies that were approved, so-called, were those that were presented by the American Medical Association. So that's why we have what we have today. But even though that has occurred, we are revisiting and beginning to awaken and have respect again for water as a healing agent.
Yeah, as a definite transformer. I mean, when you think about baptisms, no moderner has a problem who is of a particular religion to think that they get the Holy Spirit when they go into the water. And so it's very easy to get it, even to a moderner. But when you tell them that the tap water has been deformed and that we can show them images of it, talk to us a little bit about Dr. Is it Masura Emoto? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes, Masura Emoto. And Dr. Masuro Emoto from Japan, I've met him on several occasions. I usually, when there's an international symposium on water, and he is present and I'm present as a speaker, they usually put us back to back where I will speak before he does or vice versa. But he delved into whereby he would expose water to different music or different thought patterns and then freeze the water and then look at the crystals that formed based on the exposure of the water. So, for instance, we'd have three vials of water from the same source, and he would expose each vial to a different form of music, and then he would freeze them in a deep freeze system and use a dark field microscope to reveal the intricacies of the crystals, and he found that based on the exposure of each vial of water to the different forms of music, you'd have different crystals form.
And some patterns are really beautiful and harmonic and balanced, and others are not. So you actually see the signature of the information put into the water through the crystal. It's extraordinary, and there are some in your book, which I'm so glad, and people are those on your website as well?
They are not, but, you know, that's really an outgrowth from Theodore Schwenk's work from the 60s of the drop picture method, whereby you would put a droplet of water onto the surface of various waters from different sources, and then you would look at the patterns, the vibrational patterns that would form on the surface, and you would then photograph those patterns, and you could determine the health of the water through those patterns. So those are just different methodologies of appreciating and communicating with the messages that we get from water. In fact, Emoto's book is called Messages from Water.
And I think, you know, as you pointed out in your own healing journey, and as anybody who's ever sort of laid in the bathtub and given themselves healing, loving messages, as we do children, as a mother does when her child's in the womb, we can appreciate that every word we say is recorded in the water in our body and in the water of the bodies of the people we're speaking to. Which is why it's really so important that we're really acting as co-creators all the time, influencing not just the waters in our body, but the waters of the world. Now, when we come back, William, we're going to take our last break of the evening. I would love for you to talk about the three-part water cycle that you've been advancing around the world. And I believe it's such an important addition that I want to be sure we have time for you to explore it. Don't go away. You can follow up more after the program with William Waterway at williamwaterway.com. Of course, links to all our guests are on the front page at 21st21stcenturyradio.com.
Hello, I'm Bill Sweet of Spindrift Research. Our website is spindriftresearch.org. You are listening to 21st Century Radio with Zoe Hieronymus, and we're looking forward to having more of you open-minded people listen in.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. William Waterway is our guest. Find him online at that name, williamwaterway.com. He's the editor of Water Voices from Around the World, a 2007 release. It's 77 different authors in the book, 300 plus photographs. It's extraordinary. Another book he's authored, we've talked about in the past, The Holy Order of Water, Healing the Earth's Waters and Ourselves. So, William, you have been talking and advancing a three-part water model that is really a unique addition to the world's understanding of water.
Yes. When you ask anyone what their definition or what their perception of the water cycle is, you're going to get that embedded grade school answer, and that is we have evaporation, condensation, precipitation. And that's the water cycle, and this is embedded in everyone's minds around the entire planet. The reason why it is embedded in everyone's mind is that it based on a discovery from 430 years ago by a potter who is also a self-taught naturalist, who wrote a book called Admirable Discourses. And in that book, in a couple of paragraphs, he defined the water cycle in that fashion. But I must give credit to Palissy, Bernard Palissy, he's a Frenchman, for that definition, which was the first accurate definition of the atmospheric water cycle. Because prior to that, for thousands of years, we even had Leonardo da Vinci, we had Galileo, we had all the great minds throughout history, Michelangelo, we had many who tried to put forth a definition for the Earth's water cycle. The prevailing theory or definition of Earth's water cycle for over a thousand years was that there was so much water in the Earth's ocean and so much pressure from such a huge quantity of water that it pressed itself underneath, beneath the continents, and as it pressed through the sands and soils deep beneath the continents, the salt was drained out. And then it would push its way up into the mountains and then flow down as pure water. Because humankind could not understand that when there was no rain, when there was no snow up on the top of a mountain, there still was water flowing down the mountain. So, and you have to understand, we evolved with understanding the behavior of water in the environment in which we have evolved and in which we survive. So the perception for over a thousand years was this was water from the ocean pressed beneath the continents, bubbling out from the top of mountains and flowing down as pure water. And then along came Bernard Palissy in 430 years ago, and he puts forth in his book that was published in 1580 that, no, what it is, it's evaporation, and then condensation, and then precipitation as rainfall or snow, et cetera. And that's the water cycle. And in time, this was corroborated by scientist Edmund Halley of note, who discovered Halley's Comet about 100 years later. And that corroboration solidified that definition, and that has been the definition that has been taught for over 430 years. Which is all fine and good. It was the best we had to go with at the time. However, our knowledge has evolved relative to water, and we now know through the discovery of plate tectonics in the 1960s and relationship and understanding with water in the cosmos, in the universe, that it's far, far, far more complex than we thought, or expansive. And that is that there is an oceanic water cycle whereby all the water in our Earth's ocean is circulated down to the core of our Earth, and that it then vents up through mid-oceanic ridges under the ocean, or it vents up through volcanoes, or through rifts, continental rifts, which is where the continent is being split apart by volcanic activity, And so therefore we have a circulation of all the water in the Earth's oceans, where it circulates, where we get a new ocean approximately every 7 million years, and that this circulation of the ocean's water down to the core of our Earth is crucial for the health of those oceans, for sustaining the mineral content on which life depends. So that is vital to the survival of life in the oceans. In fact, we also look at that as being the foundation from which all life evolved, was through that process, the oceanic process. And also, too, without that oceanic water being pressed deep into the core of the Earth and heated, there would be no volcanoes. And if the planet didn't have any volcanoes, if we didn't have any venting through the of the recirculated water under the oceans, that there'd be no life on planet Earth. Basically, we would have a dead planet. So it's this circulation, this what I call the oceanic cycle, is crucial. It's a very, very vital part of the water cycle, because without it, there'd be no life. And then we have the atmospheric cycle, which we are all familiar with. That's the evaporation, condensation, precipitation. But then there's the third part of this. And it really was revealed just relatively recently, I'd say in the past 5 years, whereby we lose water to outer space, and we also gain water from outer space, where we have cosmic rain or cosmic water coming to Earth on a daily basis. So all through humankind's history, we always said, and I still see it quoted today, where the amount of water that's on planet Earth has always been here for billions of years. It's never changed. And that's untrue. So basically what this new definition of the water cycle says is that we have the oceanic water cycle that gives us a new ocean every 7 million years. We have the atmospheric water cycle that's driven by the heat of our sun. And then we have the cosmic water cycle, whereby we lose water to outer space that then goes out into the universe. And then we gain water from outer space that enters into the Earth's atmospheric water cycle. And so it's not a closed system. Our water cycle on Earth, from the core of our Earth, connects with the waters of the universe. We give waters to the universe. We take waters from the universe. So that is the new definition of the water cycle. I presented it for the first time last year at the International Symposium of Aquascience and Water Resources that was simulcast to 11 countries. And it's been picked up by the Water Channel, distributed around the planet in many different languages. And so I feel very proud that I was able to make this contribution at this time.
It's a beautiful addition because it really expands our understanding of how we're related to the universe. I mean, you know, when I broke with the help of Vince DiPietro, the carbonaceous meteorite on Mars, and when we talked about water on Mars, which Bartholomew Nagy talked about in the 60s, way before NASA started talking about it in the year 2000 plus, it's fascinating. And when you look at this, I mean, when I think from, you know, from way out there in space to the 2.5 billion people on planet Earth who don't have clean drinking water, and then we have bottling companies who are polluting the planet anyway with the plastic and extracting water that's not theirs to extract. And then you come along and talk to us about cosmic water. I think, well, wait till somebody figures out how to bottle cosmic water. You know?
Well, we're very primitive in our behavior patterns at this time in history. We're very self-destructive.
Yeah.
Entered into a Faustian bargain with the man-made chemicals of the world and bottled water, marketing bottled water, and what we've done with the production of various seeds and control of agriculture through various seed products, and they're short-lived. They're hybrids. So yes, there are many things, but beyond this, beyond the what we're looking at, and I feel that this is another aspect to this to look more expansive, though, is that water, we now understand that the first water molecules manifested shortly after the creation of the universe. And so throughout time, and I feel that there are many other planets that have liquid water and intelligent life forms. Carl Sagan believed that, and so do many other scientists. But when you think about it, if conscious beings like ourselves, if we like to call ourselves conscious beings, that possess an intelligence so that we can perceive the world around us, our daily lives and that which science gives us, that we perceive the universe. Our ancestors were always fascinated with the stars and their movements, and that's why we have Stonehenge and we have the pyramids. We always had that cosmic relationship. But if there were no human minds, there was no form of intelligence to perceive the creation of the universe, could it be known to exist? So when we ask that question, of course the answer is, of course, it could not be perceived, it could not be known to exist without the manifestation of intelligence. So therefore, perhaps, the manifestation of water at the birth of the universe, the evolution of the universe, giving birth to intelligence so that we could and do bear witness to its creation, interact with it. To me, that is the purpose of creation, the purpose of the universe, and that is our relationship with creation. But we only have that relationship, Zohara, through water and through intelligence and consciousness.
That's beautifully put. Look, we are out of time. I want to encourage our audience to stay abreast with William Waterway at williamwaterway.com. Buy his book, Water Voices from Around the World, a 2007 release, and The Holy Order of Water, Healing the Earth's Waters and Ourselves. As always, it is a pleasure, William, to share airtime with you. And
thank you, Zoe.
You are very welcome. And to everybody, stay safe, take care of each other, and prayer does magic on the waters.
Forever young.
Breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lissieri.